Hello, I'm Joe Cordell of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. At Cordell & Cordell, we encourage our clients to participate, to recognize how essential their role in this process is. They've got to be willing to help us help them. And by working jointly in a sort of partnership, we're more likely to get the best possible outcome for our clients. And that's really the standard that our clients can fairly hold us to, is what is the best possible outcome for them. So clients who are facing divorce need to recognize that for them to succeed, they need a partnership between them and their attorney.
The attorneys at Cordell & Cordell work to help men maximize their role in their children's lives. Contact the domestic litigation firm of Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's San Francisco area attorneys, a partner men can count on. 650-389-1111. Online at CordellCordell.com. That's CordellCordell.com. Offices in San Francisco, San Mateo, and San Jose. Se habla español. Legal services available in English and Spanish. Kimberly Llewellyn, licensed in California.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han, and on the line we have Tim Mahalan, president of TJM Limited in Chicago.
Good morning, Tim. All right, so last night, the Bank of England chose to keep UK rates at that record low, yet it aims to raise interest rates faster than expected while expecting slower growth through 2018. So help us understand here, what's the monetary policy bias for Mark Carney and Co.?
Well, I think that the real key here is that the weakness of the sterling, especially versus the euro, is reducing the purchasing power or real incomes in the UK. And that's having a debilitating effect, I think, on economic growth, which is why they're hesitating to raise rates, as some people may have thought they were ready to, but they indicated they have to because they've got to stabilize the currency. But I think what they're hoping for is they're going to get a bang out of this weaker sterling so that economic activity, perhaps some exports and so forth, might give them the leeway to raise rates. But the fact is it's a currency protection measure, and a protection of purchasing power is the reason why it indicated that they're going to be raising rates. So they're telegraphed that, but the opportunity, the opportune time is not here yet, which is basically one of the worst dilemmas you can face as a central banker, to have to tighten for currency reasons. So I think that's the current dilemma.
All right, so just to make sure I'm reading you correctly, it's more about the currency and subsequently inflation and not so much about economic growth. But what about Brexit negotiations, though? You know, wouldn't the prudent thing be to wait till, say, after March 2019 when Brexit negotiations are set to end? Wouldn't it be prudent to wait until after then before tightening monetary policy?
Yes, perhaps it would seem so, but you know, March 19 is quite a ways off. And when what my take from hearing him was, his main concern was the loss of purchasing power or real incomes of British citizens. So, you know, they may not have that luxury, and it might be better to get the sterling on firmer footing going into the Brexit negotiations, because March 2019 is, you know, a year and a half or so, a year and three quarters away.
So coupled with that loss of purchasing power and that slower projection for GDP growth in the UK, can the UK really sustain it between now and, say, I think the third quarter of 2018, when they're expected to raise rates for the first time?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're hoping they're going to get this bang, I think, from exports, and that maybe this will get the external economy going, so that therefore they could, have that leeway to do so. But, I think that's probably a realistic assumption, especially given the trajectory right now of what we're looking for in a world trade and global growth situation right now. So I think it's perfectly reasonable to expect that.
Got it. Now, switching over to the U.S., we last night had weekly U.S. jobless claims falling to 240,000. How does that set us up for the July non-farm payrolls report due out later tonight, Malaysian time?
Yeah, it seems like we're like a broken record in this jobless claims and the unemployment report, because we're looking for, what, about 180,000 or so in payrolls. And I think that this jobless claims number has been pretty much stuck around this level. And therefore, I think that we're expecting much more of the same from the employment report, which is, 180,000. But the real key in this is, I think, what we need to watch for is wage growth. They're expecting 0.3%. And we've been continually disappointed in that number. And I think that the Fed would like to see that. And I think that's what the real catch is going to be tomorrow in the wage growth, because given unemployment at this level right now, that's what they're looking for. And that holds the implications, in my view, for further rate hikes.
But that's the key, though, right? Because despite that tighter labor market, wage growth has not been there. Do you have any inclination as to when we might see that uptick, or that expected uptick at least?
Well, to me, it looks like it's more of a structural problem and probably telling of the quality of jobs that are being created right now, I think more than anything, which is, you know, another structural issue that we have in the U.S. where we can't get out of this slow, new normal type 1.5-2% GDP growth rate. And, you know, again, I think it's one of these issues here where you've got changing demographics here, a shortage of probably the skilled workers that are the high-paying jobs. So it really tells me a lot more of the quality of the economic growth here, which to me isn't really encouraging from that perspective.
Now, to use a phrase that you just employed earlier, at risk of sounding like a broken record, do you think Trump policy, you know, if and when it does gain traction, do you think that will be the catalyst for wage growth? Or, you know, as you suggested, is it just purely, you know, other structural problems?
Well, I think, first of all, his policies look like they can't get off the ground, and he's facing a lot of resistance in Congress for that to be employed. I do think that lower tax rates and corporate tax rates, that sort of supply-side stimulus, I think would help to get wages up. Now, whether that's going to be healthy long-term is another question without other policies being enacted. But I think for right now, it looks like it's more of the same, and we're stuck in Washington with nothing being done. So therefore, it's really hard to see any light. But I do think of some of his policies regarding taxes in particular and deregulation were implemented, I think we'd see some movement in capital formation, business formation, and then wages would follow.
So, Tim, even with this tighter labor market in the U.S., inflation is still sluggish and feeding into a global inflation, which is at its lowest since 2009. So explain this to me here. How can there be this tightening bias by major central banks around the world, given that prices aren't rising fast enough?
Well, first, I wouldn't use the word tightening, because there's no central bank tightening, even though they're raising rates, because they're real rates. When you look at inflation rate and look at the funds rate, at best, you could be neutral. So I think what they're doing, I think instead of tightening, I think normalization bias is probably more appropriate, because no one's really tightening. And given the fact of all the, you know, even though we're talking about rolling off the Fed balance sheet, they're still buying $500 billion a year in treasuries through reinvestment of proceeds and, you know, reinvesting maturing securities. So, you know, you really have not seen a tightening yet. It hasn't even begun. It's a normalization. But having said that, yes, inflation's low, and that begs of what the big problem is, the deflationary forces pulling in the world. But when you look at the asset prices, I think that's where the inflation is. And that presents a huge dilemma for central banks if they let this go on. And I think it's a bubble, if not in asset prices, it's a bubble in complacency. So I think it begs for much more problems. And I think as far as we really have to get our mindset and not be so used to the fact that this is normal, because it is not normal with a $4.5 trillion Fed balance sheet and what is it, $18 trillion or so globally? That's not normal, and that is fueling asset prices to the point where we've seen this happen before. When you get asset prices, asset price inflation, and when the asset prices bust, it really, you know, puts in motion a lot of things that you know, are very unpleasant for the economy and the global financial market.
But do you think the marketplace is sharing your view, though? Because it appears that they seem to, you know, factor in that these extraordinary measures or these extraordinary monetary policies as being normal and perpetual.
Well, one adage I've always heard is never confuse brains with a bull market. And I think what you're seeing are people drunk on asset prices and this type of what we've seen is, you know, this steady upward trajectory. We haven't had a 1% correction in this year in the stock market. I mean, this is unheard of, the type of, you know, the lack of any correction. So it's a one-way street in the market, and people think they're feeling pretty smart and feeling like they understand things, which I think is, you know, at least in history has shown before, it could be a mistake. But I did say the bubble, even if someone would argue it's not in asset prices, to me, it's in risk or complacency, or I guess lack of regard for risk or more complacency.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the... Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.